I want to see people, you know, thinking a little bit harder about it. And that's the task I challenge myself with. Like, that's why I read so much. That's why I like try to rub up against this hard stuff, because I want to relate with people. I don't want to relate with things and intangible like technologies and fucking products and like, you know, like, or rock climbs even. I want to relate with people. And that's what's interesting to me. Now, how to just keep getting better at doing that.
Welcome to the Stokecast, where each week we bring you an inspiring athlete, adventurer, or entrepreneur and dig into their stories and strategies for balancing work, life, and adventure while having fun and making a difference. I'm Jonathan Ronzio.
And I'm Emily Holland. Thanks for joining us today.
Let's get to it. That was a reading from the Book of Samuel. As he's known on Instagram and probably across all social, Book of Samuel. But this is a chat with Sam Elias, who is a climber, a skier, traveler, storyteller. He's just a sponsored outdoor athlete.
It's great.
Really, really rad guy.
Yeah, he's a really, really thoughtful, mindful individual. I kind of think this conversation speaks for itself. I mean, honestly, it was really deep. I loved our conversation, and it got me stoked to definitely read more books and put more thought behind the way I feel about certain aspects of our lifestyles.
Yeah, we talk about everything from climbing to a career in the outdoor industry. To him really discovering climbing and community being the core component of that. And then everything from family, relationships, and float spas and books. Yeah. And it's really interesting. I mean, there's something that strikes me about Sam's story in how casual he is about it. And so in a way, his trajectory seems a little accidental, yet at the same time, intentional. There's just this duality of kind of like when you look at like, what does it take to be a pro athlete? You have to, you're a pro climber specifically, like, obviously you have to be a great climber.
Yeah.
Obviously,
which is not easy.
Right. Which is not easy, but you
especially
have to
coming
be,
to it so late at 22. Like, that's not
totally
normal now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off.
So you have to be a good climber. You have to be, you know, able to see a story and tell a story. And you have to be intrinsically motivated to pursue, like, big, crazy ideas and be able to plan expeditions. And you have to be able to navigate the whole media sponsor, minefield of building relationships, building that network, and creating a sustainable career doing that.
Yeah.
But there's just something about, like, the stepping stones of Sam's life that, like, even though maybe he didn't set out to become this professional climber, he got into climbing, and then he was working in the outdoor industry, and he was working for PR brands and like kind of just building that resume. And it's almost like when they say you find what you're not looking for, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like it's easier to talk to a girl or a guy at a bar when you're in a relationship, right? When you're not searching for it comes to you.
Yeah. That is a good metaphor. I like that, as always. No, but I think that is so important. I think what he talks about in that he tried all these different things and he figured out what he liked and he made all these connections within the industry. It's like these really thoughtful measures, but he is so casual about it. But I think it's a good lesson where it's like, I don't know what I want this whole thing to be. I know that it brings me joy. I know it fills my soul and it gives me community. So I'm just going to start doing little things that I'm curious about and try to build a holistic, more well-rounded version of myself. So when I do go to those conversations, I have that background. And then I know so much about what's happening in the industry that I'm a really valuable asset. And that's what I have to say about that.
It's a good thing to say. Nailed it. All right. Enjoy this interview with Sam Elias. Okay, Sam, how you doing, man? Welcome to the Stokecast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm psyched.
We're psyched to have you. What's going on in your world right now? What's describe your current situation?
Oh, wow. It's been kind of an interesting little time. I trained really hard. Then I had to have like a sudden knee surgery. I did it really quickly because I had this upcoming trip to the Red River Gorge. I got like a lot of things going on. I'm moving houses. That's always stressful.
And where do you live?
I live in Salt Lake City, Utah. Awesome. That's where I based my life for the last 5 years, and my personal climbing, and then all these like little outlets that I use for meaning or to balance that, like that selfishness. So yeah.
Well, that's a perfect topic for conversation, balancing the selfishness, and we'll get right into that. But I do want to ask about your knee surgery. Like, how long did you know that was coming, or was it kind of a freak thing? And it was like only 2 weeks ago, and then you're like crushing it at the gym. I saw.
Yeah, I was like, I wouldn't be doing that after knee surgery.
Yeah. So here, I'm getting old, man, and things are just breaking down. Let's see. I had a little tear in my meniscus. And if you guys know, or for those who know, like, it's a really common injury. Most of the time, normal people, if they have one, they don't, you know, do anything for it. It kind of like grinds itself away and they're fine. But I actually had my right knee done in the summer of 2017. And so when I did this left knee, I knew exactly what it was. It was bothering me kind of all year. And then in the climbing gym, I tweaked it and I knew it right away. So like the day after, 2 days after, I saw a surgeon, asked to get an MRI, got an MRI that same day, follow up appointment like 6 days later, surgery 7 days later. And that was, yeah, like 3 weeks ago at this point.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, I don't know, you know, it's being a professional athlete or being like really active, body's just like disposable, this fragile thing, and I don't know, you know, you never know where your limit is until you push it way too far, so that you can kind of scale it back and get a little wiser. And I mean, but eventually, you know, we're all just breaking down, so it sucks, but it's just, it happens.
Yeah, I think about that a lot, like when I'm out in the mountains and like especially running down trails, down mountains, and it's one of my favorite things to do because it's one of the most like mentally engaging when like your feet leaves the ground before you even know where the next foothold is going to be. But I know that like whatever I'm doing to my knees on those descents is going to catch up to me at some point, but you don't want to listen to that someday voice, right?
Yeah. You're flying, right? It feels like, must feel like flying. And I guess in the moment it's worth it. And as long as you're aware of the potential, you know, consequences, I don't know, man, you got to just live in the moment. And if it feels right, you just do it.
And it's live in the moment, but also like do injury prevention while you're doing that. Like do some foam rolling, you know, like make sure you're stretching for sure.
Yeah.
Something do I never do enough of, right?
Yeah, I need to tell you to do that.
Yeah, so does my wife all the time. So, all right. Well, let's get back to what you said about being selfish yet trying to have balance. Like, what are your most selfish pursuits, and then how are you balancing that with the rest of your life?
Well, I mean, my personal climbing and my personal and like my traveling for climbing, it's really selfish, and you know, there have been points in the last few years, in the last, decade, I guess, where it's been extremely selfish in an unbalanced way, where it's unhealthy and it's just doesn't seem right, doesn't, like, make sense. So it's just this balance of time away and time home, time climbing and time doing other things that aren't climbing. It's never perfect, you know. It's just like this moving target, and I guess the compass is just like, do I feel good in the moment? And if I don't feel good in the moment and I'm climbing, then you have to listen to that, or doing whatever it is that people do that's like their main thing, their main source of joy, and then you just have to sort of find a way back to it, or like take a step away from it to come back or something, you know. So yeah, I mean, we all have moments in our life where we need to be selfish, and we all need, you know, times to balance that, or times that we need that are selfless, and where everybody's just kind of playing with their personal scale.
Yeah, that's hard to know that line too, right? It's like, yes, when you're feeling bad and you're doing the thing you're most passionate about, that's definitely a signal. There's also those like micro signals, if you will, within every day that you're having, that maybe things are like a little off kilter. So
I mean, is there a practice that you have where you're intentionally doing things on more like a daily or weekly basis in order to make sure that that scale doesn't fully tip over into the quote unquote selfish portion?
You know, at this point, it's kind of like I've been through enough cycles of like where you think you have it and you don't have it. And then when you think your life's totally fucked and like up and just, but then in retrospect, in hindsight, it seems like you did your best work. You know, like you go through enough cycles of that and you sort of start to think like there's not a lot of sense to it and timing. Like you just can't like evoke enlightenment, you know. It just, you kind of have to just like let it ride. And the only thing I feel like makes a lot of sense is just kind of how I'm feeling inside or the attitude that I'm having with regard to what's going on. I mean, things can be really, really shitty and hard and difficult and painful physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, whatever. And if you have like a decent attitude about it, you can always find like lightness. So we prepare, you know, prepare to perform in life and in sport and do our best to kind of like control all the variables we can, stack the cards in our favor. But then at a certain point, you just got to like let it go, let it ride. And it's just, I guess it's just practicing, you know. Like I said, like I've been through enough cycles of thinking it was going to be good and it not being good. And then alternately, like not really having a reason for it to be good and it being great. And you just kind of realize like, hey man, there's like a lot of forces at play in the universe and in life and a lot of randomness, and I'm just going to do my best with these sort of like cycles or periods, and that's it.
Yeah, I like what you said about just kind of feeling it. Like really, that is often what it comes down to, is knowing. I mean, there is a very strong feeling that you get when you are obviously neglecting something and leaning too hard into something else. You just know. Like I don't think there's any real like science to it other than just like intuition and understanding that.
I think that one thing is challenging, and Sam, I don't know if you've had this challenge too, but is that is to fully listen to that voice inside or feeling inside yourself, where, I mean, there's so many other factors that are coming at you, like what your parents think about you or what your friends think and what your community is saying. And it's like, it's sometimes hard to decipher, like, what am I actually feeling right now? What am I actually, like, is this something that I want to continue doing? Am I doing the wrong thing, et cetera? I think that's kind of hard to tap into sometimes when we live in a world that we're, like, inundated all the time with outside sources telling us how we should feel.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's important to develop this skill of, like, knowing yourself, knowing what you need, what you want. And then also just having the awareness of, you know, like, that internally, but also like the external world, and always pressures and expectations everywhere. You know, we put them on ourselves, and then the world and other people put them on us. I just come back to this like personal narrative, you know, like the story everybody, the story that we tell ourselves inside our head about ourselves. And we make that story. Like, it's not just a fixed thing. We can choose to listen to what others think about us and integrate that into our narrative, but we can also not, you know, and we can write that however we want. And then, you know, writing it in such a way, or talking to yourself in such a way so that you feel good and you're psyched on the direction you're moving, and also how you're balancing that internal and external. And I mean, yeah, it's just like telling yourself a really nice story about yourself, about your past self and about who you are in this moment. And also, you know, like kind of wondering with like amazement and faith and hope about, you know, who you'll be in the future. I find it fun, you know.
Do you have a go-to story, like when you're struggling, like physically or spiritually or emotionally, whatever it might be, do you have a a story that lifts you up each time, or is it individual to the moment and you just having to kind of like reframe the, you know, reframe the specific feeling and try and like assign a different meaning to it and move forward?
I like that question. It's a good question. I think that there's two parts to it. One is like really deliberate, you know, intentional sort of practice that like sucks a lot of the time. It's like work. And the other is just this, like these momentary unfoldings where it feels like subconscious just like comes out and solves a problem for you or gives you an idea that's brilliant or inspires you or something. And it's this interplay of being deliberate, you know, and conscious and using like our brain and being very aware. And then these moments where we just kind of like sit back and whether we're meditating or journaling or doing art or just taking a walk or fucking whatever it is, where you like allow kind of your subconscious or the universe to kind of just like flow through you. And in both of those times, there were practices, really amazing things happen. But I've kind of had to learn both, and they're very, obviously they're like polar opposites or like really different things.
See, you seem very in tune with like yourself and your being, from a
That's
standpoint
I'm
of just
selfish. I'm a selfish son of a bitch.
And he's so self-aware.
Yeah, right? Self-aware, right? When you're that self-aware and selfish, you can be very in tune with what your heart and mind wants.
Maybe, yeah, double-edged sword there, for sure.
Well, but I mean, from the standpoint of like, you mentioned meditation and journaling and art, and it seems like you just kind of have the ability to channel a creative confidence and express it. Like, was that always a piece of you, or did you kind of learn that along the way? Like, how did you sharpen that double-edged sword?
Ooh, great.
I don't know. Part of me wants to believe that it's always been there, and I get some sort of like ego boost from that, like, oh, I'm a creative person. But part of me doesn't believe that. I'm not sure it matters, actually, even. At this point, there's been a lot of, it goes back to that sort of twofold thing. You know, there's been a lot of hard work, a lot of like trial and a lot of error and failing, but then a lot of just, reflection time and sort of having the moments of things flowing through me and allowing my subconscious to make these connections between all this random stuff that I've encountered in my life, all this content that I've saturated myself with. You know, in the moment, things don't make sense, but then it's amazing what the subconscious can do or what can just happen, you know, once you have a wisdom about, you know, your life or yourself. And that only comes with time. So it just goes back to that kind of like, I've tried really hard, especially in the last few years, to nurture my creativity and to nurture my that aspect of myself where I can kind of like, I guess, just be confident in what's going to unfold. But also, you know, I've like worked really hard. I read a lot. I work with a sports psychologist. You know, I've had a mentor since I was like 16 years old, an old ski racing coach. You know, I'm try to meditate very frequently. I journal a lot. I like try to rub up against, yeah, some hard things and like do deliberate work. So it's just kind of that interplay of those things.
Yeah. And that stuff is I think the internal work is the scariest stuff about human existence. I will say it like all of the physical stuff or the things that we speak to about the outdoor athletes on this podcast is so incredible. And it's incredible what physically and mentally to a certain degree that your body can do in those feats. But I think the actual sitting in your thoughts and being able to like come to terms with who you are and then change it or whatever is like probably the scariest or most interesting part, I guess, of the, maybe I shouldn't say scariest, most interesting part of the human existence, is to be able to like dive into those pieces of yourself that are nature versus nurture. And it's like all these little pieces that come together that make you who you are. And the more that you can get familiar with those, or even okay with them, it's just the better your life is overall, I've found in my short time here. But it's like the scariest, isn't it? It's the scariest to sit alone, if you're not used to it too, sitting alone with your thoughts.
Well, it's just, it can be like a rabbit hole. And everybody's got to go down the rabbit hole to the depth that they need before they come, because like with awareness comes more awareness, and you kind of like, you're just going down, you know, you're going from these levels of awareness, and it gets scary, you know, and it gets dark and it gets heavy, and you kind of have to rub up against all the real stuff. But then there's a certain point where it starts to come back, you know, and you kind of like unlearning, like undoing, you're almost like gone as far as you need, and now you're rewriting or like recrafting yourself, reprogramming or whatever, simplifying. You've kind of like made yourself as complicated as you need to be in your own head, explored all the avenues, explored all the bullshit, all the family stuff, all the relationship stuff, all the whatever, you know, and then you can start to come back. But everybody's balance is, everybody's sort of like depth with that is different. And I mean, it can go really deep it goes really deep for everybody, but it's just if you're ready to kind of do that.
Yeah. I like what you said about rewrite, right? Like you go into a certain point and then you're not just coming back. You're rewriting the narrative as you come back. So it's, have you ever done one of those float spas?
Dude, like a totally.
sensory
deprivation.
Yes,
I haven't. I really, really, really want to, and I just had a really good girlfriend tell me about how she just did one not so long ago, like a week or two here in Seoul. But I haven't done it, and I'm actually so fascinated.
Dude, you would love it. Just based on this conversation already, I'm telling you, you would love it. I've only done it once so far, but I want to work it more into my routine. And it's exactly what you're talking about. Like I kind of tried starting to get into meditation over the last few months, and I've been on and off using Headspace and trying to do some on my own. But those were only for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, kind of at a time. Going for a full hour in the sensory deprivation thing and just being like alone in the dark and like sense no like sense of weight or anything, like it was just wild. And it was the most,
you
like,
went for an hour.
An hour.
You did an hour. Oh,
in,
wow.
An hour in pure,
well done.
Pure darkness, just floating space.
No touching the walls, no nothing. Like
nothing.
Well done.
At times you really feel like you're just drifting off into space, and it's quite a trip.
Have you seen the movie Get Out?
Yes, that it's like the sunken place.
I actually haven't seen that movie.
Okay, well that'll be your next. All right. Anyways, Sam will go to the float spot.
If we go down that path right now, it's not going to be productive.
we'll take that offline.
So you're going to do the float spot. I'm going to watch Get Out, and then we'll chat again.
Yeah. Okay, fair. Yeah, I like it.
So at what point in your life, to get back to your professional pursuit, at what point did kind of climbing just become the joy that you would pursue? Like, when did that take over?
Well, just when I started. I mean, in 2005, I like was out of college. I moved to Detroit. I got this job. I was working, and I started climbing more, going to the climbing gym. And I was making frequent trips down to the Red. And then it eventually, you know, Miguel offered me a job down there. So I knew right then that climbing was going to transform my life. I mean, I was like a 5'11 climber or 5'12 minus climber. Like I didn't care about the level. I didn't ever want to climb harder. I didn't care about climbing harder. I didn't even know what grade was the maximum. I just loved the community. I loved the pace, the lifestyle. It was like a soulful lifestyle pursuit. And this community just took me in. And I like basically knew that this is a pursuit of mind and body, just like ski racing, which is something that I'd practiced since I was like, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. So I really gravitate toward things like that. That whether it's sport or art, it's so everything I do, I need to do like with both my mind and my body, or my mind and my hands. And these people just took me in and treated me like family, no questions asked. And I just, you know, I loved that. I loved being able to be outside and use my mind and my body and be amongst these people that just wanted to do the same thing. And everybody was just at their own level, and it didn't fucking matter who was doing what. And that was 2005.
Was a family connection or a community connection something that you were seeking at that point?
No, but yes, because in doing that, it was a huge kind of disruption to my actual family. I knew, at least in the first few years, that, you know, it was going to be really hard. My dad immigrated from Syria, and he worked really hard to provide a life, you know, and a structure for me and my two siblings, and for our education, and for our the potential for us to make good life. And that good life is, you know, like doctor, lawyer, businessman, you know, whatever, six figures, like big house, like nice cars. You know, the path I chose is basically the complete opposite of that. And I knew very viscerally that in the moment that they weren't going to be psyched, and they weren't, you know. And so, but I had already sort of started cultivating this family, the climbing family and the family in the red. So they supported me, you know, for a few years, until, by whatever stroke of luck, I got good enough to become, you know, a professional, make a living and do things that get attention and show that I'm like proficient at this thing. And you know, then my folks came around and they realized that, you know, I wasn't going to starve to death, and I actually had a good life and I was happy. And so, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like both things.
Yeah. It's almost like one of those things that you don't go out seeking for, but once you have found it, you realize that there was some sort of area missing in your life before. It sounds like, at least, that you were searching for, but you didn't actively know that you were searching for that.
Only in retrospect did I come to understand that the climbing community filled this hole for years that I had with my real family, the climbing family, you know, until my real family kind of came around to it.
Yeah.
So you said by whatever stroke of luck, you managed to get good enough to become a professional climber, to turn that into a career, you know, and not starve to death. So was that something that you were seeking, or just like, were you just good and out there climbing and somebody took notice and said to somebody else, and eventually the conversation made it your way? Or were you pursuing sponsorship and the life of a professional athlete?
So I never wanted or never thought about becoming a professional climber or whatever. I was just working all these different jobs in the outdoor industry to be able to climb. The first was at Planet Rock Climbing Gym and around the Detroit area. And then the second was like Miguel's Pizza and Climb Shop and Campground in the Red. And then there was a gear store. Then I moved to Colorado to climb and rifle gear store. You know, I was a ski shop manager or a retail sales floor employee, ski shop manager, hard goods buyer. Then the media, Rock and Ice magazine and Trail Runner, because they were so close to Glenwood Springs. And then I worked for Black Diamond as a ski rep for 4 years and then like associate sales rep. So I was just always working these jobs and gaining all these different perspectives of the outdoor industry. And, simultaneously, my climbing was really taking off. I did, I improved really rapidly. My value has always lied in not only my abilities as an athlete, but also my kind of like accumulated industry work experience, as well as, you know, like I'm really decent at skiing, and so to be able to work with my sponsors like the North Face and Black Diamond and Scarpa, not only as a climber, rock climber, but also as a skier, it's really valuable. So I kind of, my best friend, he explained to myself once as a purple squirrel, you know, like there's like one in a bajillion, right? And I'll never be a specialist. I'll never be the greatest in the world at one thing. But I really do have an interesting skill set, and I'm continually trying to develop that and push that, even to this day. But I guess it was more apparent to people outside of me that I should get sponsored to become a pro climber than it was to me. I didn't even think about it. I mean, I was just doing, you know, what I thought I needed to be doing to fund my life and my climbing. And it's, you know, it's just about connections and who you know and what you can offer. So by the time I got to know enough of the right people, I had a really, really substantial skill set and industry work experience and athletic accomplishments. And, you know, being a professional athlete, that's just there's a lot of different ways to kind of fill that in, a lot of different boxes that can be checked. You know, one box can be you're the best at the world at this one thing, no one's better than you, or you can fill in, you know, a dozen boxes that are like, hey, I have a really high level at all of these other ways to provide value. And so it was never a goal or anything, it just kind of happened. But I'm really glad that it did. And then once it happened, I kind of had to find my own personal balance about it, because it's a very interesting slippery slope to like live and operate on. And now I kind of feel like I'm really kind of like coming into my own and comfortable with myself.
That's great. I mean, it's kind of funny because it's like you weren't actively going after it, but you were doing seemingly like very motivated, obviously, to like get all these different amazing jobs in the outdoor industry, which obviously fueled your lifestyle and let you climb and get to the level that you were able to get to. But there was some sort of like intrinsic, obviously, motivation to like continue to get, you know, whether it be contacts or just like experience, and that kind of curiosity within each of the different areas of your sports is kind of like, there's something to be said for that too. It's like, you're not actively going out to sponsors and saying, hey, can you sponsor me as a climber? It's like, but you are still honing all these skills. So I think there's a lesson there in that, okay, maybe you're not going to like go right up to and ask for, you know, the end goal, but you can still do all these other things to like build out a more holistic, well-rounded version of yourself in order to maybe eventually live the lifestyle that you really want to live. That was a roundabout way of getting there, but I got there eventually.
No, you did. No, and I appreciate that. And that's actually good. And something that I was reminded of as you were saying that is like, you know, I think for me, I approached everything as if it was the community in the Red River Gorge, like it was my family, you know.
Oh, I love that.
And I basically came to approach the entire outdoor industry in the same way. Whatever job I was working, whoever I was meeting in that job, these are my people. This is my family, and this is where I'm supposed to be. It's all good and it's all right, you know? And that's because I had that experience, like when I first was, you know, brought into the climbing community or into the industry by the people in the Red and by Miguel's. It was just, and so that's kind of vibrated through my whole existence as a up till now, in every position I've worked with, every sponsor I have. I try to go a little deeper, you know, like get a little bit further, because it's not just what never was about just climbing to me.
Right.
It was just about the connections and about the way of life, the lifestyle. And man, I'll be happy to connect with anybody on that level for the rest of my life, you know, be it you guys here and now or whatever.
People who slide into your DMs. Like I did. Hey, you want to
talk?
No,
believe me, that's not true. That's not true. Believe me, there are plenty of people who slide into the DMs that don't even get a response.
Woohoo! I got one.
You know? There are plenty. Yeah, there's plenty of people who are on the DMs. No, it's on the real. You know, it's on the real level.
Nice. I like that.
I mean, that's a authentic way to pursue any career or anything in life, right? It's like you have to go about it with the right intention, and when your intention is just simply connecting and being genuine and adding value to other people's lives in a meaningful way, like then success will find you.
It
becomes pretty apparent, you know, like, hey, these are my people, this is my place, or this is not for me, you know. And I'm just kind of trying to bounce situation to situation or moment to moment amongst those things, you know, where I feel at home. I mean, why would anybody do anything where you didn't feel at home, you know, with a person or with a job or with a whatever?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Don't look at me, Jonathan. and I actually read this, it was like a study done.
Let me care. It's not fair. I know that's not fair. You know, it's like a lot of people in the world are just doing what they feel like they need to be doing or have to be doing. And hopefully there's some sort of counterpoint to that. There's like a reason or like an awareness or an intentionality with it. And that's enough. It sounds like this kind of like woo. Everyone should just be like living their fucking dream and dreamland, like what Instagram is. Or like looks like most of the time. But yeah, sometimes we have to do hard stuff or stuff that we don't want to do so that somewhere else we get the thing we want to do. And then that's when it makes sense, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And if you can carry that context with you and it makes sense to you, then that's what matters. But yeah, for sure, sometimes if it sucks and it's hard and well, I don't want to make it seem like
yeah, and there's obviously like financial constraints too, like not a, you know, like in certain degrees of the world, like people, you know, there's certain things that people can't do, but like you said, you can find that like small thing even within your day that brings you the joy that like really fills up your soul. And it doesn't need to be that you're, it doesn't necessarily need to be that your like traditional job that you get most of your money from is that thing. You know, that's why people have side hustles. That's why people have, I hate the word hobby. It sounds so ridiculous, but you know, hobbies, and things that they do. I hate
what
the word
wrong
hobby.
With the word hobby.
It's just Hobby Lobby. Like that's what I think of when I think of it. Yeah. But anyways, that was we'll take that offline. Where was I going with that, Jonathan? Help me out. Well, I hate the word hobby. That's the end of that.
Yeah,
sentence.
Well, that's the end of. That's where you're going with that. No,
moments of joy is what I'm saying.
I would want to know actually. So let's get beyond the Instagram la la land then, and like so your life as a professional climber beyond the obvious appeal of it. Every job, every career has tasks, deliverables, things that, you know, do suck at times. Like what's the real behind the scenes? Like what are the things that are kind of a bummer or that are like the hard stuff that people don't see?
Without losing your sponsor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a business, you know, like it's a game. And, these companies, like they have to make profits. They're all in their sort of modes by which they do that. They like make things, advertise those things, sell those things. And it's these cycles, you know, and I'm on that same process, you know, like I'm basically trying to advertise and sell myself and trying to find the right people that are interested in, you know, the things that I'm selling or the things that I'm, you know, making or believing in. It's so weird, you know, it's such like a cliche to talk about this balance shit, but like it is, it's
we
like
talk
this,
about it all
you
the
have
time,
to find the balance of yeah, of selling yourself out, but also, you know, buying into yourself and believing in yourself and a person and a company, like that's just everybody's, that's what people and companies and things are doing, you know. And it gets obviously exponentially more complicated when you're like a company of hundreds or thousands of people making thousands of products, but it's just a game, like you said it's like a hustle, and everybody's just got to operate on their own internal and find their own personal levels with which they, again, going back to this like selfish versus selfless, like I mean sometimes I have to go do things that, you know, don't fit perfectly into my training program or my performance program or my trips I want to do or this, that, the other thing. But then sometimes I block out huge parts of the calendar where I need that time, and I need to shut a lot of things out, and I need to just kind of like focus on myself.
Yeah, I like that piece about...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I like that piece about like selling yourself or selling out and finding that balance between like what is actually selling out versus what is buying into yourself and believing in yourself, because like that's something that you know, when you're trying to promote yourself, that's a hard thing to get past mentally to at first, to be like, what is everybody else gonna think when if I'm just like pushing all of me and my content and my pursuits, right? And like from the outside at the start, it can look very ego driven until it's like very cool and admirational, right?
Authenticity is just, I think it's pretty easily, it can be easily identified. I think people's like bullshit meters are pretty high if they've sort of tuned in or like had a little bit of awareness about it. Especially with like social media content or just like my life in general, like I'm trying to keep it pretty fucking real. Like I know the stuff I'm supposed to do and have to do for my sponsors and for, you know, my personal brand. But I believe there's a way for me to accomplish that while at the same time sort of ringing true to the things that are important to me. And that's the task, you know, like it's easy to kind of like put up an accomplishment or to like sing your own praises or to talk about the newest product or whatever. That's just predictable, right? I think I want to see people, you know, thinking a little bit harder about it. And that's the task I challenge myself with. Like that's why I read so much. That's why I like try to rub up against this hard stuff. Because I want to relate with people. I don't want to relate with things and intangible, like, technologies and fucking products and, like, you know, like, or rock climbs even. I want to relate
right,
with
like
people.
Tick marks,
so,
right.
Yeah, like, so it's like, how to do that, like how to get better at doing that, how to just keep getting better at doing that and, like, have more potential to, you know, to connect with people. And that's what's interesting to me.
Yeah. But I think that that's also like, I think when you first get into climbing or really any sport, it's easy to get bogged down in, right? Like, okay, like what grades have I ticked off and where am I at in that? Like what, and you get kind of like tunnel vision a little bit, but when you pull your head up and you realize like the people around you or the community that you've created around that, like that's the real stuff. That's what keeps you like passionate, I think, at least about coming back for more and more and more.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like this, what I've come to find is my own kind of like process and practice has only been enabled by my sponsors. And I've been able to go further down these paths and kind of uncover unique things about myself and connect with more and more people through that. So at the end of the day, it's been this massive blessing for me to really, really get to explore that. But I first had to sort of define for myself what it was that I wanted to go exploring. And now I think they really respond and respect me for being this way and enable and empower me. It's been a cool journey for me.
Absolutely. And so one thing I wanted to ask about, if you could talk a little bit about, is your trip to Lebanon. I mean, of course, you've been all over the world, it seems, for climbing and skiing. And I know you've been on Everest and all this fantastic stuff, right? But I'd love to hear about the Lebanon trip. I've heard about that in another interview, and I wanted to just touch base on that and see what that was all about and the impact it had.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I mean, you know, to go just back to that point I just made, like the whole enabling and empowering me to kind of search out and explore aspects of my life. I mean, that trip is a perfect example. I mean, I still kind of think maybe that was like my coup de grace, like maybe the most important thing I'll ever do or in my climbing life. And for sure, completely because the North Face believed in me and allowed me to kind of push really hard against something that I wanted to know about and to be able to connect climbing with my family and connect climbing in the Middle East. You know, we talked earlier about how my first few years of my climbing life were really, really challenging for me with my family. There was the first bit of light that broke through, and you just mentioned it, basically was Everest, when they could understand something that I did, when my parents could understand something and they could tell their friends about it and talk about it. Up to that point, they don't know what 513 is, 514 is, you know, free climbing this, like that, ice climbing competitions, this, that, the other thing. They have no idea what any of that is, right? You know, but Everest, you know, 2012, they can finally start to understand. There's like a superlative and a talking point. But even still, I always was searching for some way to connect my family with climbing. And, you know, I basically learned that the oldest living members of my family lived in Lebanon. And I learned that there was climbing being developed there. And so I went like on a, I went by myself on this like exploratory mission. I think it was like December of 2014 or something. And then I pitched this trip idea to the North Face and to Vice, and it went in 2015 for 6 weeks, and it was just this insane trip where I'd like go to Beirut. I'd spend time with my great aunts, great uncles. My sister was there. She speaks Arabic. She went to a year of college there. We'd spend time with our family. Then we'd go like up into the mountains, and I'd bolt routes and make first ascent. And we even brought our ski gear, and we went ski touring, and we'd never see a soul in these 10,000 foot mountains. And it was just this insane, like full circle experience. That, you know, by the time the documentary came out, it felt like everything came together and everything was right.
And where can our listeners find that documentary?
You can find it on YouTube. We called it Rooted, R-O-O-T-E-D, Rooted Climbing Lebanon. Or you can like Google my name and Vice Sports. It's pretty easy to find. It's like 22 minutes long, and yeah, I'm super proud of it. It's it just did everything I ever wanted it to do.
And so that became a something that you could ground your climbing into to your family as well, beyond Everest as a talking point.
Yeah, I at that point, you know, the fact that like this mainstream media company and this mainstream apparel company, you know, acknowledge my ideas and acknowledge me as a climber and supported me, and then we made this thing all together. It's like, I mean, what more could they ask for, you know. It's like they, and in addition, they see me happy, you know, they see me traveling around and healthy, and yeah, it's just,
it's beautiful.
It's just like, you can't deny, nobody can deny, if you see somebody who's like obviously living well or living happy, it's undeniable. Like there's no argument to be made, you know? And it doesn't matter what is it climbing? Is it fucking rocket science? Is it surgery? If that person looks like they're living well and is setting an example and it seems like comfortable in their own skin, like who's to say that they're living their life in the wrong way?
Yeah. No one. That's who. They can't. Or they yeah. Go, yeah.
God, you're damn right about that.
And
you answered for me.
Oh man.
I love it. That's great.
And I'm like super reflective right now. I feel like I'm gonna go home and like meditate for 30 minutes. Oh my god.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I'm gonna no.
Don't
truly
do it.
I'm gonna go straight to bed. But
grab a beer and watch Daredevil.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Dive down the rabbit hole tomorrow.
Yeah. The Netflix rabbit hole tonight. My mind
no,
rabbit
everybody,
hole. Tomorrow.
Yeah, everyone's responsible for finding their own.
Awesome. Well, Sam, there's one question that we ask every guest, and that's how we wrap out the show, and that is just, what does stoke mean to you? How do you define it?
I guess the first thing that comes to my mind, and based on our whole conversation, stoke is just comfort in your own skin, you know? It's kind of like a gladness for being who you are and for kind of understanding that you're actively participating in your own narrative. And that should be exciting to you. That should be like something you look forward to, something that you know is that you control, not entirely, but to some degree. And so that you may feel more and more comfortable as the person that you are.
Wow, eloquent. I like that.
That was fantastic.
I like the controlling your own narrative. I like that. I'm going to be excited about waking up tomorrow. That's for sure. I am every day.
I was
going to
say, I hope you're excited about waking up. The alternative would suck.
Oh, no. All right, everyone on this podcast is going to be like, whoa, she's like, she needs some help. All right, Sam, where can people catch up with you if they want to continue along, following along on your adventure?
I guess the best place, sort of most active place is my Instagram, Book of Samuel, at Book of Samuel. But it's so funny. When I moved to Salt Lake City when I was 16 to ski race, I went to a ski racing academy. I moved in with this host family, and the kid that I was living with, he was like, "What's your email?" And I was like, "Email?" He's like, "You got to have an email. What do you want it to be?" And he helped me make my email. So I was like, Book of Samuel. And it was, of course, Hotmail was the shit back then. And subsequently, all my shit is Book of Samuel, at Book of Samuel, and bookofsamuel.com. I don't know. You know, like I'm not like, it's not a religious reference. It's just like everyone's life is a book, you know, that we're writing. It's like this whole reference to the narrative thing. Anyways, Book of Samuel, bookofsamuel.com. The Book of Samuel takes over the world.
I love that, because most people will be like, "What was your first screen name?" And it's like super embarrassing, and you never want it to be like shown to anyone. And you just like, "I'm going to go with this. I know myself, and this is a great name. And I'm just going to keep going."
Yeah,
with it.
No, I mean, it's I'm like riding it.
Yeah, I like it.
Perfect. I love the whole, like, the narrative, the book, like all that, the theme that we've kind of been talking throughout, and obviously that you live in your life and your message. So speaking of books, let's end this on, I know you read a lot. Let's give our listeners your top book, maybe either your top recommendation or what you're reading right now. You can choose one or the other.
Oh, wow. It's a perfectly timely question, because I was on a photo shoot all day for the Utah Public Library System, where I had to pick my favorite book. And I don't have a favorite book, but I can tell you the book I picked for that and exactly what I'm reading right now. It's called In Praise of Slowness. Mm. And it's a fantastic book. And man, if I just feel like, I mean, I have so many, I actually am always reading like 5, 6, 7 books. But of all the books I've read in the last little bit, this one feels like it's just, it's a really important message that I think, especially us in the Western world and us in the United States, like we need to chill out. We need to start learning how to chill out a little bit and just slow down a little bit. Not even like, it's way too much to ask to, you know, Americans or the Western world to slow down a lot, you know, but just a little bit, finding little moments through the day where we can just kind of resist the momentum of the world around us. I just think that this is an important book.
Love that.
Perfect.
In Praise of Slowness.
Mm-hmm. Was it Flowness or Slowness?
Slowness. Flow is another book.
Yeah, right.
Flow is another book that he was recommending. Yeah.
Yeah, Flow was the other one.
A lot of shout outs on this podcast here. yeah, so we'll put that in the show notes as well, the Flow notes as well, and you can take a look at them there, right?
There it is.
Honor of me.
Yeah.
Going forward, you can catch everything from the episode on the Flow notes.
Love it. Okay, thanks so much, Sam, for sitting down with us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
So that was Sam. He is awesome. He actually mentioned the Lebanon trip that he went on with North Face. And I got a chance to finally watch the full thing. So I had seen clips and it was amazing. So that's called Rooted, Climbing Lebanon. We'll include that in the show notes. But it was so incredible the way that he connected his family roots to putting up new climbing routes in Lebanon and in this area of the world that us Westerners see as really volatile and crazy of a place, and it many times is. It was beautiful to see like the landscapes there that we never really consider or think about as much for our outdoor pursuits. It was incredible. What did you take away from this?
Yeah, that really was a cool story.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No, I thought, I mean, I just had fun talking to Sam. It was just a really fun guy to chat with, and I really like how introspective he is and how much he really thinks about his, like, personal development,
yeah.
His internal development, his mind, you know, it invests in himself. It's not just about, like, training to be a climber and producing good content and, you know, delivering stories to sponsors that help continue his career. It's not just about that. He's like very, very into like the community aspect of climbing. Mm-hmm. And that's like where he found the passion to continue doing it. And also just like, I don't know. I liked his kind of conversation about the balance of selfish pursuits versus selflessness.
Yeah.
Because I struggle with that a lot where like, if I look at my bucket list or my, you know, 10-year plan or 5-year or 1-year, whatever. And, you know, it's very easy for me to just kind of have too many things weighted on the, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
Right. And not think, so much about like other people around me, friends or family or, you know, that's why like very early on, I kind of rooted a lot of my adventure with these volunteer stories or this philanthropy, yeah. Because I knew that I had to balance some of that. Otherwise I would just kind of continue down this like tick list of everything Jonathan wants out of life. Right.
It's hard to get away from that though. And Sam talks about some of the ways that he's dealt with it, but he also is very open about like, yeah, we all have moments that we need to be selfish and that's okay. And I really appreciate that. I just really appreciate his frank nature and the way that he's realistic about his pursuits and the whole outdoor space. And I like the way he talks about making up your own narrative. You make up your own path and the things that you tell yourself about yourself are all up to you. And I really felt that was really powerful.
Yeah, it was a good chat.
Yeah.
So we're going to put everything in the show notes. Mm-hmm. As always, that's just going to be at thestokecast.com, or you can go to exploreinspired.com/thestokecast, or just search Stokecast on Instagram or whatever. There's so many ways to find it, but you know what the show is called, so I trust that you'll be able to follow the breadcrumbs to the cheese or maybe I mixed up my metaphors there.
This was, what is it? No.
Follow the breadcrumbs home, or like how the mouse gets
moose,
the cheese.
When a right? moose gets a muffin, and then I don't know what the end of that.
Mooses and muffins?
Yeah.
We're getting off here.
Have a great night, everyone, or day, whatever time of day you're watching this and watching. Oh my God, listening to this. Thank you so much. It.
Hey, if it's this is your weird. First time joining us, like, this is normal. And please hit that subscribe button, and we hope to talk with you next week. And if you've been listening for a while, thank you, and continue tuning in and sharing the stoke. You guys are the best.
You guys are the best. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Emily Holland.
And I'm Jonathan Ronzio. We'll catch you next week with another episode of The Stokecast.